Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Go ahead, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, only 4 stars. I'm probably going to think that you are a hater. On the show, I think I saw Kawhi Leonard smile. That strange applause in Milwaukee that someone needs to explain to me a little bit. But first, all right, so on Sunday mornings, I go do a brunch with a bunch of my folk. Pablo come to the brunch. A bunch of people, we do a brunch, right? And so I rode to the brunch with my brother. We rode down. We there. And right before I'd left in the morning, I'd realized that Tiger was actually in the British Open. And the British Open comes on all crazy early because I really ain't had to think about the final round of a golf tournament in the context of Tiger Woods in a while. So anyway, we ride on down to Brooklyn. We get there, and that's not close for you. It's kind of close, but it's not close for you people who don't know the geography of this place. But we get down there, and then we realize, oh, snap, Tiger's on, because Pablo had let us know that he was not coming to brunch because he felt he had a professional responsibility to stay home and watch Tiger Woods. Now, does that make me wonder if Pablo was silently judging me? You're damn right it makes me wonder if Pablo was silently judging me. But anyway, next thing you know, somebody breaks out a phone and goes to the open and just puts it on the table. And there we are watching Tiger Woods play golf while we eat our breakfast at lunchtime. Cause that's the Tiger Woods effect, man. Like every time somebody asks the question about whether Tiger is back, I find myself in a place like it doesn't matter if Tiger's back. We back. We are there. We have arrived. We'll pull up our chairs. We are here for the Tiger Woods show. And I think that, I mean, it didn't happen, so it doesn't really matter, but I had already in my head sold and decided the way that this thing was going to go, man. I had it totally, because, you know, one of the interesting quirks about Tiger Woods is that he has never won a major championship where he was not at least tied for the lead after 54 holes. So this would have been Tiger not tied for the lead after 54 holes. He would have been behind. It would have been the first time that he had come back to win a major. At one point, I looked up at the leaderboard, and the homie Spieth was at the top, right? Now, you hear a lot about how they say this younger generation of players is not afraid of Tiger Woods. I absolutely believe that they are not afraid of Tiger Woods, but I also think that most of these cats ain't never been in no situation where they had to worry about Tiger Woods coming and getting them. So in spite of the fact that Tiger Woods had never been the dude from the comeback, I was like, ooh, Jordan Spieth's on top, and he got Tiger breathing down his neck. Ooh, that could be great drama. And then we got into it, and then Tiger actually took the lead, and it was like, ooh, this thing could happen. Then Tiger started hitting people with golf balls, like hitting in the wrong green, getting a little sandy, all that stuff like that. And then you realize that the dream had evaporated. You hold on for a while, and then the dream just kind of disappears. And my feeling on Tiger Woods and his return and all this stuff that happens is still all we need is one. Like, the fact, honestly, that we're asking for one is pretty greedy. Like, I'm curious, when was it that we decided with Tom Watson, for example? Tom Watson never won a major championship after the age of 33. At what point did we give up on this idea that Tom Watson was going to win majors? Now, Tom Watson was about 150 years old when he almost won, I think it was the British Open a couple years ago, and then he went Tom Watson and choked out the putt, and then it didn't happen. But we were just like, oh, good job, way to get there, right? We're so greedy with Tiger that it's almost like we've written this in our heads and we feel kind of entitled to get that last one. Because all I really wanted, all I think is reasonable to expect to get out of the dude is maybe one more. I think, though, that outcome that we talked about right there, the one that happened with, was it Francesco Molinari, Gabe, that who won?
Indeed.
You know, he's got that dude caddied for his brother a few years ago in a group with Tiger Woods. I guess he'd have a cool story if I cared anything about him. But anyway, this is probably best for golf, man. I think like what golf wants to get out of this Tiger Woods thing, cause I don't know if you saw this game. Did you see the overnight ratings? Apparently it was the best overnight ratings for the final round of the British Open since 2006.
Yeah, I got the same note that you did. I guess we shouldn't be surprised by how ablaze social media was yesterday with people on Tiger Watch.
But it's amazing that we just come right back. You know what I mean? Like, we just come right back. All we need from him is a whiff, and we come right back. So it's the highest ratings they've had for the final round of the British Open, the British Open since 2006. We're talking about 12 years, And we just keep on coming back for a game, by the way, Gabe, that I contend that most of the people who come back for not only don't care about, probably don't even really know nothing about.
Yeah, I think people are just here for the Tiger Watch.
And we've always been here for the Tiger Watch. Like, if you have ever played any measure of golf, Tiger Woods is, of course, wild impressive. Like, I mean, I don't think there's any need to point that out. But you know who else is wild impressive? Every single one of these other dudes. Like, one of the major differences, I'd say, between golf and most of the professional sports that we watch is that you can, if you just have the money at the very least, but you can reasonably recreate the circumstances under which professional athletes play. So, like, you can go into a gym and play basketball, but you're going to, you know, just basically play basketball against the dudes that's in the gym. You're not going to really be in no situation where you can, like, get 10 guys on the floor and all of them are NBA players so you can find out what it is to play in the NBA. You can't do that, but you can just be a regular dude golfer and go play these same courses that these dudes play. And let me tell you what you're not about to do. You're not about to come nowhere close to a 67. Like, just how there's people all the time that feel like they could guard NBA players. Like, we got dudes that really feel like if they were just, all they had to do was be 6'6 or 6'7 and they feel like they could get a bucket in an NBA game. I don't know anybody that feels that way about golf. We all know that these dudes are bananas. Like, we know we have been in enough situations where we can look at it very quickly and very simply and be like, nah, man, I can't do that. I can't get close to doing that. And with that being the game, Tiger Woods managed to make those other cats look up and just be like, yo, man, I can't do any of this. Like, why is he, like, so much better at this than the rest of us? And so for him to so wildly exceed what I don't think most people understand is such a crazy, impressive level of talent. All we know is that what he's doing is unreal, right? Like, that's all I think most people know or really grasp about what it is that Tiger Woods is bringing. And what we do here is it is just, I think, a general appreciation for brilliance. Like, that's what we get from a lot of people with Tiger Woods. There's also, you know, obviously, like, the backstory that I think we've forgotten a bit over the last 20-something years because this isn't new anymore. But, you know, the backstory of, you know, the black dude taking down golf. Like, I mean, that's an interesting thing to put in the movie pitch that makes people want to maybe check it out, right? That'll get somebody to read your screenplays. Like, that part gets some people in there. But it's just a general appreciation for brilliance. It's not like anybody likes this dude. I'm not saying that everybody dislikes him. I'm just saying it's not like anybody likes this dude. Why would we like this dude? We don't really know anything about this cat. I actually, for myself, I come up with a lot of reasons to dislike him. I got some reasons to kind of pity him also, but I mean, we don't know anything about this cat. We don't really have any true way in there. Gabe, I actually think the most revealing thing that he ever talked about was after, you know, he got caught up in all that stuff. I mean, okay, I guess we know something about him. We know that he's stingy with him. Didn't he say, little mama say that all he ever got her was some Subway?
I don't remember that. But I was actually just going to ask you, is his image repaired now? I mean, do people just kind of forget everything that he did and he was up to?
Yeah, nobody cares. And I contend that nobody cared in the first place. That story was hilarious, right? Like once he got caught up and everything started rolling out, and then we found out, like, what he was into. And then, like I said, we found out that she said all he ever brought her was some Subway. And you know how dedicated to being cheap you got to be Tiger Woods, and all you ever got her was Subway? Because when's the last time you think Tiger Woods went to Subway for himself? You think Tiger Woods pulled up in the drive-thru to get himself a 6-inch meatball sub because he needs something fast? Like, I don't believe that that's what's happening here. I mean, granted, he was eating at Perkins, but still, I just don't see that. Like, he just went, she said all he ever got her was something from Subway. Like, that story was funny, and then people had to take it too far because what had happened was they had some measure where they could lord over him just a little bit. They had some measure of moral high ground. And then they stomped it down on him, but you're not going to get me to believe that many people were really that offended that rich dude cheated on his wife. And you were never going to convince me. I remember when Billy Payne, speaking on behalf of Augusta, gave his lecture to Tiger Woods for what he had been doing. You going to tell me that club full of rich dudes is going to act so appalled by the idea that somebody was cheating on their wife? Tom Watson gave Tiger a super lecture about that stuff, and then we found out he had a divorce settlement that was sealed so nobody could know what the deal was. Nah, nobody ever really cared. People got over that one quickly. I would also know, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, his ex-wife got half of that $1 billion. I feel like everybody's all square at that point. But I thought the most revealing thing about Tiger Woods as a person, he did, somebody did some story about him. He may have even kind of like first personed it or whatever, but he talked about when he had the kids for the weekend and how, you know, his new life, one of the great joys for him is, you know, having the kids over to the house and making some mac and cheese. And I was like, no, no, no. Like, Gabe, are your parents still married?
No, man.
Did you have those weekends at dad's house?
With mac and cheese.
Out pizza. The box.
Yep.
Yeah. So I was like, Tiger Woods, there's a whole bunch of people that are like, wow, Tiger's the dad cooking his kids mac and cheese out the box. Gabe, shouldn't Tiger Woods have some maid, I mean, some chef to be cooking this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, come on. He's not like stay at home dad here. This is like multi-million dollar Tiger Woods. Maybe he gets some enjoyment though out of making that mac and cheese. Maybe
out the
it makes
box.
Him feel more like a dad.
That's right. Out the box. And you know what they probably have for breakfast the next morning? That's right. Eggo waffles. That is what I imagined that he brought to him. That was like, oh, an insight into what Tiger Woods is, right? Tiger Woods is making mac and cheese out the box for the kids. Boom. There we go. But otherwise, man, we don't know nothing about this cat. But we show up every time the party starts. And guess what? The PGA is right around the corner. We going to show up for it one more time. I just want them to win the Masters one more time. Just because they've done everything they could. They redid the course to try to stop this dude from winning. And it's been pretty effective. Don't forget, he hadn't won the Masters since 2005. But they did everything they could to stop that man from winning. If he could just take it one more time and then just quit, yeah, I would then scream myself, I am Tiger Woods. All right, so I'm going to try to lump a whole bunch of stuff together in here all at one time. I'm going to give you all your broccoli at once. I mean, I'm going to call it broccoli in this case because I understand that some of y'all don't like it when we talk about things that touch on some measure of seriousness. But I don't know if you saw what happened during the All-Star game, the Major League Baseball All-Star game, where the guy's name was Josh Hader. It's Josh, right?
Correct.
Okay, just making sure. It was Josh and Johns and all that can get mixed up. Anyway, Josh Hader. He's out there. It's his first All-Star game. He's from not too far away from D.C. where the All-Star game was held. His family all shows up. And in the course of the game, somebody found some old tweets that he sent when he was 17 years old. And boy, were they out of hand. I think he said something about white power. He said something about the KKK. There was a measure of homophobia and misogyny. It was all over the place. It was not a good look. And Gabe, didn't we get some N-words in there too?
Oh, we did.
Yeah, we got some N-words. Like, you know, it's not what you want to have come out at that time. And then there was that fortuitous camera shot that we'll never know for sure, but it definitely looked like two guys on the American League All-Star team were looking at their phones and had seen those tweets and then pointed at the dugout. And so he gets into the clubhouse afterward, and, you know, they let him know the questions are coming. His family's there. They got gear with the last name on it, because imagine what a great name, you know, what a great day for the family name. Bro, the family had to take that stuff off because the family name had now been shamed. They're like, no, you don't really want to be identified by your family name right now, people. So they took those things off. People came with the cameras, they put the microphones in his face, and he said that, you know, what he did was, he was 17, he was young, he was stupid, he was immature, he shouldn't have done that. He says he's grown from then, he's not that person now. Then, unfortunate for a couple of his teammates, couple black dudes that played for the Brewers made the All-Star team, and so then they had to be the ones to go answer about it, and they just found out, and they got to give the same, you know, he's a good dude as far as I can tell, answer that you always got to give when the white folks around you be tripping and somebody wants you to come be like a character reference or something like that. You know, like, this is the place that they were in. And so that happened. The Twitter Wayback Machine, especially on things when people were teenagers, I don't know how much value there is in that. I feel like it's just a game of gotcha. Like, I don't think that I'm getting deep into something by doing that, that it really matters or is there any consequence. And I don't know what to do with that, because I do wonder if I see that from somebody like that. I mean, so what, you know, what kind of person are you now? What has changed? All of those things. But I also don't know how exactly it is that the person on the other side is supposed to demonstrate that. Like, I mean, it just winds up being a tricky situation. I have said, no matter who you are, if you got some, like, decision that you're going to be a professional athlete or something like that, man, once you get out of high school, you need to delete that account. There's nothing there for you. There's nothing at all that is there for you. Nothing good is going to come from it. Instead, what happens is you carry that account your whole time, and then you put a verified check on it, then everybody knows it's you. That's it. I mean, that's where you get. So, like, I was not terribly offended that a 17-year-old white kid said ridiculous racist things. Maybe I'm just being cynical. Maybe my level of expectation simply isn't that high, so I'm not that mortified by this sort of thing. I understand to a degree, like, especially with, like, things involving gender and things with women. Man, young dudes, many young dudes who are respectable human beings right now said all kinds of wild, ridiculous things when they were 17, and they did it in an era that preceded having this digital footprint that everybody can go check back on. Like, no, I'm not, like, I personally am not that offended by it. I think that when we play that game and we jump in the time machine and get people for those tweets that they sent, especially when they weren't public figures, I think that that really becomes a very easy way for people to minimize, like, what really matters when it comes to matters of race. I think it turns it into just a silly game of finger pointing that doesn't do anything constructive. And part of the reason why it doesn't do anything constructive is all that dude had to do was get up and say, yeah, I was young and stupid. And then everybody's like, oh, sounds good to me. And then keep it moving. So, like, if that's all it was going to take in the first place, why are you even asking this dude to ask about it? Bottom line is, when people do this thing, I feel like when they jump in the Twitter time machine to get these cats, it's not people who actually care about racism. It's not people who are, like, on the wrong side of it. It just seems like people who are looking for a reason to frost somebody on the internet. That's it. But if you're not going to make this dude, like, legitimately, like, give some answers as to what his journey has been since he said those things. So, like, when did you realize those things were immature? What did you realize was the problem with what you've said? You know, when you come across people now who you hear say similar things, do you say anything to them about it? Nobody's making bring any of that stuff up. All he had to say was, it was young and stupid. But you want to know something that's interesting that gets lost in it? That dude, Riley Cooper, like, you caught him with the stuff that he said at that concert, like, in the same time as that. And he basically got to use the same excuse, and it floated across the same exact way. Like, you ain't demanding no answers out of cats when they get caught doing something like that. You're not. So, like, why are we even doing it? Like, what is even the point if you're not really trying to get anybody to say something about it? And that is where I feel where we are when it comes on these things. But that don't mean this cat is no hero. First game back at the home stadium, he gets to the mound. I don't know if it's appropriate to say that he got a standing ovation in Milwaukee. I don't know if that's fair. But there were a lot of people who were standing and clapping. I don't know what proportion of the audience is required to be before we call the whole thing a standing ovation. But to me, it didn't even matter whether or not it was everybody. It was a lot of people. Like, it was enough to notice. It was kind of staggering. And I don't think you come up with a great answer on what to say about, like, the fans in Milwaukee about that. I think you come away more so with the ability to say things macro about fans in America. But, you know, so Milwaukee, we talked about this during the Sterling Brown situation, and, you know, it is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. By some metrics, it is the most segregated city in the United States. You don't get high levels of segregation without high levels of racism. That tends to be the driving factor behind the segregation itself. That's how it works. And so when you see the people in Milwaukee and they're standing and clapping for this guy after this, it's easy to say, oh, man, look at what's going on in Milwaukee. But think about this. In Baltimore, you had people going out of their way to say how much they supported Ray Rice after he was on videotape knocking the hell out of his wife. Aroldis Chapman caught a domestic violence charge, and we saw him get standing ovations after the fact. Some of it is race in Milwaukee. I don't think you could deny that some of that is the case. But another level of it is kind of the bizarre attachment that you find that fans often have to players on teams and what they think it is, I guess, to be a good fan and decide to clap for somebody like that. Because, look, that dude didn't do anything worthy of applause. They didn't. And the applause that he received under that circumstance, and, like, the applause that Ray Rice received and the applause that, like, Aroldis Chapman received, it's hard not to feel like those fans have made a martyr out of someone. who has not been mistreated. Like, Josh Hader had a couple bad days on the internet, but he didn't suffer any, like, actual consequences for this. They're going to make him go through some diversity training or something like that, but he didn't suffer any consequence from that. He didn't. And so it does give this feeling that these people in these circumstances, when they get caught up, are martyrs. And so, like, I remember when I lived in Durham, I covered the first home game for the Duke lacrosse team the year after that scandal. So the scandal was 06. I covered the game in 2007. And it was very interesting being there because, I mean, you know, as you may have heard, I'm black. And it's very interesting being somewhere that it was like a rally for political prisoners, except the political prisoners were like, you know, affluent white dudes. Like, it was, I mean, it was a very interesting vibe. Like, I remember being there and I saw people with wristbands that said things like free the Duke 3 and stuff like that. And I was like, whoa, this is different. But they felt that those guys were martyrs for a corrupt criminal justice system. Now, I could note the irony in who some of the people were who just suddenly noted the potential for corruption in the criminal justice system. But I did understand it. Right? Like, I did get how it was that they had reached that conclusion and how they felt that way. Like, it was some cognitive dissonance just based on the ideas of normally when you had these kind of sentiments, who the people were that were around there. But it was like, yo, I see how you may have arrived at this conclusion. Like, them cats are staring down years for something that they did not do and that seemed to be serving a political agenda. Yeah, boom. Totally got how it could be that. But the guys that almost went to jail, well, almost is a stretch, but you know what I mean. They weren't playing. I think there was one dude that had been on the team previous year whose name had gotten caught up in some bad press because of some emails and stuff that he had sent. But the dudes that, you know, were facing charges, they weren't at the game. These other guys were just dudes that were on the team who went to a party that they were, you know, throwing and that they were not supposed to have had and but were alleged to have issued some racial slurs toward the dancers after they'd left and stuff like that. And I just remember sitting there and I was just like, man, I don't feel like there's anything to applaud here. You know, like after that, you could go to the airport in Raleigh-Durham and they sell Duke lacrosse gear in the airport. And I was like, I don't think this is anything to applaud. Like, I think an injustice took place in this circumstance, but I didn't feel like the overall institution of Duke lacrosse was anything that was necessarily to be praised in that moment. But they felt that the whole team had been martyred. And it always made me a little uncomfortable. Like, it was always just kind of, I feel like there were a lot of points here that got missed, right? There were a lot of important things that didn't seem to get discussed properly if this is the response that you have to this. And so, like, with Hader, and he comes out there and he gets the round of applause while he's there, the people that applaud him, I wonder if they spent more time applauding him than they ever spent considering what was wrong with what he did in the first place. You see what I mean? There's so much of a desire to forgive before even thinking about what the problem was that happened there first. And that was a little staggering to watch. You know, I think that's probably the best way for me to put it, is it staggering to watch. I told you, I went to a Braves game in 2000 after John Rocker had said his ridiculous stuff. And he got a standing ovation. This was well after the suspension had been lifted. And it was really, really uncomfortable, like being a black person in that crowd and hearing the applause in that way. Like, they were treating him as if he was a martyr. And Hader isn't a martyr, man. But I want you to think about something. Those people clapping when that dude comes back, and those people clapping for Ray Rice, you know, and these folks that get caught in that Chapman and stuff like that with the domestic violence. Those are the people that it feels like the NFL tries to appease. Like, those are the people the NFL is trying to appease with their decision on how to conduct yourself during the national anthem. It's fair to wonder whether those are the people the NFL is trying to appease when they give these way too light penalties for domestic violence infractions. So you can just be like, oh, this is a handful of people or whatever it is, but it informs the discussion on things that are much, much, much larger when dealing with some of these reactionary sports organizations and how they mete out punishment and how they try to put out the image of themselves that they want people to have. These things matter. Like, it's bigger than anything involving this one guy. It's not about this one guy, and it's bigger than just however many people you think were clapping right there. It's the very idea or the very fact that we seem more willing to welcome people back in for these transgressions than we are willing to examine the things that they do wrong. And then with some other quote unquote transgressions, you just can't seem to find the patience to do it. So why is it easier for you to forgive these things than some others? That is what needs to be asked. And that to me is way more important than what Josh Hader actually did when he was 17 years old. I don't like going in the time machine on that. I'm not going to get any conclusive answers about who he is right now based on what he was right then. But from the way that people have responded to him, I got some pretty kind of uncomfortable answers about who we are collectively in this very moment. Hey guys, no lie. I think I saw Kawhi Leonard smile. I think. Gabe, did you see that? The Raptors put out a picture with Kawhi Leonard and Masai Ujiri and somebody else that I guess is maybe Kawhi's agent. I have no idea. And it looked like Kawhi might have been smiling.
More importantly, I saw Mina Kimes like subtweet that and just kind of, you know, when people zoom in and then zoom in and zoom in and they post like three separate pictures.
Yes.
So Mina had done that and it was like a zoomed in picture of just his mouth smiling. That just like was the funniest thing that I've ever seen.
Hey man, we don't see a lot of, we've seen Kawhi Leonard win the finals MVP, but I'm not sure we've seen Kawhi Leonard smile. Like, I think that that's a fair question to ask when it comes to him. But he is going to Toronto. Did you see this at the newspaper in San Diego? I think it's the Union Times in San Diego. Reporter said that he spoke to someone who, quote, knows Kawhi as well as anyone. Keep in mind that Kawhi went to San Diego State, so you can make your guesses as to who he's talking about. But he says that he thinks Kawhi will love Toronto. And here's my thing about that, Gabe. It says he knows Kawhi as well as anyone. How well does anyone know Kawhi? Do we have an answer to that question?
I mean, the guy has to be quoting like someone in Kawhi's inner circle, right? So the amount of people that are in that inner circle is like one or two people.
Well, yeah, no, I don't even think he's going inner circle. I think my guess is that he's talking about somebody who worked with Kawhi when he was at San Diego State. And he's right. That person probably knows Kawhi as well as anybody else. I just don't know how well that is. I don't know how well Kawhi's family knows him, to be honest. Gabe, I got no reason to think he talks to them. Right? I mean, maybe he does. I mean, it would stand to reason that he talks to somebody over there. But I have no idea who it is that he talks to. But they say he gonna love Toronto. And I'm telling you, man, a lot of guys in the NBA look at Toronto as a place that they don't want to go. Man, Toronto is dope. A whole bunch of them would really like Toronto. Do you remember, like, you know, we got a little generational gap here, but do you remember when Steve Francis said he didn't want to go play in Vancouver and force his way to Houston?
I don't remember that, man.
Okay. I don't know.
Before my time.
Yeah, it's fine. It's cool. I was just making sure, you know, but like, I don't know how much you know about Vancouver and I don't know how much you know about Steve Francis. But if you know a little bit about either of them, you know that Steve Francis would have had the time of his life in Vancouver. Vancouver bought a life that Steve Francis seems to appreciate. And I couldn't believe that he didn't have a single person around him that could just get him up there for a weekend. Like, he got drafted in June. The weather would have been nice. They would have had him up there and he would have had a ball and he would have stayed. I could totally see Kawhi Leonard enjoying playing in Toronto. Once again, the problem is none of us know anything about Kawhi Leonard and we don't know anything really about the people that's working around him, except I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, but you see this, that the guy that like handles his representation is some dude whose dad is worth billions of dollars. And so his dad made a $10 million cash infusion into this marketing agency that he works for. And then after the cash infusion was made, that dude then started working with Kawhi, but the company doesn't really have many NBA contacts because their company primarily works with NFL players. But I feel like, Gabe, you hear what I'm saying here is that it sounds like it's an amateur hour.
Yeah. The way that we had discussed it on the podcast was we talked about how the people who represented him didn't really represent any other NBA types, only NFL people.
But he got here, it seems, in part because his pops put money into the company. That is the last reason that you want to hire a dude that is to be your agent, like however it went. But I don't know if any of them have any idea what they're doing. I don't know how much of whatever these plans are, Kawhi's. I don't know if they're Uncle Dennis's. I don't know if it's the agencies. We don't know anything about that. But I have to say, I would not discount the possibility that he gets to Toronto and he likes it. Paul George re-signed to play in Oklahoma City. And if you can get somebody to decide they're going to stay in Oklahoma City after he's from L.A. and he decided he wanted to go back to L.A. and he stayed in Oklahoma City, I'm here to tell you, folks, Toronto is a lot more cracking than Oklahoma City. And I don't mean to make you people from Oklahoma City feel bad, and I don't want to make you folks from Toronto feel bad that I'm comparing you to Oklahoma City. I'm just saying Paul George is willing to stay there. Kawhi maybe, just maybe, will do Toronto. But you know when we're going to find out whether or not Kawhi is willing to do Toronto? You know when we're going to find that out, right, Gabe?
When are we going to figure that out?
Probably somewhere around November, December, when that hawk come. When that cold start blowing, we're going to find out a lot about how much Kawhi enjoys living in Toronto. That Toronto cold, man. One time I was in Toronto, and I was at a friend of mine's at her condo, and we're posting up. You know, I'm from America, man. I don't really know nothing about geography that ain't germane to me. And so I had gone on that trip to Toronto, and I remember that I looked up the weather before I left, and they said that the highs were going to be like in the mid-30s and the lows were in the mid-20s. And I'm like, well, that ain't so bad, man. I could rock with that. And then I got there, and I'm like, why is your 35 degrees so cold? It just didn't make any sense to me. And so I'm sitting there. She got this, like, penthouse spot, and I look out over there, and I'm like, wow, that giant lake. Is there any chance that that is Lake Ontario? And they said yes. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that's why this is so freaking cold. If he can make it through that first stretch of cold, man, Toronto got a chance. I feel like the Raptors need to make sure that sitting at his locker the first day it gets even a little bit breezy is what they call it, a Canada goose.
When you got to New York and I asked you what type of jacket you bought, and I saw which type of jacket you bought, I was like, all right, he knows what's up.
Yeah, I had to get the goose, man. I did a two steps on the jacket, but I think I told you one day I'd gone to Miami to do a week of Highly Questionable. And while I was down there, I looked up and I was like, okay, well, what's the weather going to be when I get off the plane coming back to New York? And they said that weather was going to be something in the neighborhood of like 30 degrees. And I'm like, ain't no way in the world I'm stepping off that plane into 30 degrees with the coat that I brought with me. So I ordered a bubble coat express mail sent to my hotel in Miami so that when I got off the plane in New York, I would have it. So I got that. And then I had to step my coat game up one step more. And dude, this New York cold ain't got nothing on that Canada cold. Nothing at all. But hey, man, Kawhi's not really out here trying to get a bunch of attention, right? Like, if Kawhi's cool with, like, laying low, being in the background a little bit, this will work for him. He can absolutely make Toronto work if that's his thing. Like, I'm just saying that I can see it happening. I can. But then again, I don't know anything about the man, so I can't really say too much about that. Now, one thing I can say, though, by the way, before we get out of here, before we move on to the next block, that is, Michael Beasley is going to play for the Lakers, and Gabe is a Lakers fan. And Gabe, are you looking forward to Michael Beasley playing for the Lakers, or are you mortified by the fact that they keep doing things like signing Michael Beasley?
I'm just totally at a loss for words on the subject. Like, for me, I'm getting the distinct feeling now that we're just going to punt the season. Or we're just going to play all young guys all the time, and then these guys are just going to sit on the bench and get paid for a year.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, right? Because they still kept all the young guys. They haven't had to give up any of them. I got an alternate theory. I'm curious what you think about this. What if this is all Magic Johnson just trying to make Luke Walton quit? Because if you're Luke Walton, haven't you thought about quitting? You got to coach Rondo, Laz Stevenson, JaVale McGee, and Michael Beasley at the same time. You telling me you haven't thought about quitting?
Jeez, man. I mean, he couldn't have picked a worse bunch for a head coach to try and manage all at the same time and all get all on the same page.
I feel like all Magic could have done to make this better was to have looked up and seen Andre Blatch getting in that fight in the Philippines and then be like, yo, I forgot about Andre Blatch. This is as good a time as any to see if he's willing to join an NBA roster. It could work. That's where they are.
Man. Shaking my head.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am now fascinated by the idea of seeing this team. I just want to see what it looks like. Like, I don't think Rondo's a problem. And the reason is, Rondo was a problem when he was young and thought he knew more than everybody else. Now Rondo is old and thinks he knows more than everybody else. And guess what? When you're old, chances are you know more than everybody else. Like, he can be the guy that he always was, but it's not as off-putting now because now he's a wily veteran as opposed to a snot-nosed kid. So, like, I think that one can work. Lance Stephenson, that one just seems bizarre. And I do worry about this with Magic, because I agree with Magic when he's saying, can't everybody play like the Warriors? Not everyone should build their team to be like the Warriors. But guys who played ball in the 80s are often building their teams according to an antiquated paradigm. And it feels like Magic Johnson is trying to build a team that can win without shooting three-point shots. And I don't know how many teams exist that are like that. And that would be the level of concern. But I guess we're going to see what it is next year. Also, Gabe, tell the Kobe stans to stop messing up these LeBron murals. Like, you think they want to win after all these last few years.
Gosh, I mean, I saw our boy Dominique Foxworth debating with the 710 ESPN Radio LA guys on First Take about how LA fans really feel about LeBron and whose side are they on, Kobe or LeBron. It is embarrassing for the city of LA that they've defaced the second mural now. It's embarrassing.
Who does this? Y'all got LeBron!
In a life!
Y'all got LeBron! Like, the folks in Cleveland were so bad when LeBron left, but they got it right back in shape when he showed up. You supposed to be happy when LeBron shows up. Hey, B.A., that's your team, man. That's your team. All right, guys, talk about whether they're trying to get Luke Walton fired. Maybe the Lakers need some help trying to find a way to hire better. Maybe they should try ZipRecruiter. Look, it's hard to find qualified candidates. It takes so long. Sometimes you have too many applicants, but ZipRecruiter makes it easy. Check out ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. Now, I'll tell you what ZipRecruiter does. They take your job and send it to over 100 of the web's top leading boards. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes. They find people with the right experience, and then they invite them to apply to your job. The applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one. They spotlight the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With those results, it's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/B-O-M-A-N-I. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, story number one of the day comes from tech.
My name is Peter Hawley, and I'm a reporter covering technology for the Washington Post. And for the last few years, I've been writing about the rise of artificial intelligence and fears about killer robots. Now, this week was a pretty big week in terms of killer robot news. That's because several thousand scientists, academics, and technology experts got together and added their name to a list pledging not to support the development or use of lethal autonomous weapons systems, also known as killer robots. So for most people, that raises a basic question. What is a lethal autonomous weapon system? The answer is that it's a system that can identify, target, and kill somebody without human input. Now, we're not talking about drones here. Drones are piloted by people, and people are the ones that make the decision on when to pull the trigger. We're talking about systems that can do all of that on their own. So this might sound like some nightmarish vision from the future, but according to Human Rights Watch, autonomous weapon systems are already being developed in nations around the world, including the United States, China, Israel, South Korea, Russia, and the United Kingdom. So if this sort of thing scares you, you probably know that researchers have been warning about the rise of intelligent machines for years now, in some cases decades. But what made this list different was that it included some of the largest names in the technology world, people like Elon Musk, the co-founder of Tesla, as well as the co-founder of Skype, as well as three founders of Google's DeepMind. That's the company's premier machine learning research group. In total, more than 2,460 individuals from 90 countries and 160 organizations signed up for this particular pledge. I think it's safe to say that the biggest name on this list is Elon Musk. And if you follow him on Twitter, you know that he's been warning about the rise of artificial intelligence and deadly robots for several years now. In fact, last year he called AI, quote, a fundamental risk to the existence of human civilization, a risk that he deemed even greater than North Korea. However, people like Mark Zuckerberg have criticized Musk and labeled his comments inflammatory. Now that Elon's warnings are being echoed by scientists from all over the world, the question is whether anybody will listen.
So, Gabe, are you scared yet?
Did somebody say Skynet?
Yo, so you're telling me that it's just about to be robots out here killing people, like, on their own?
Yeah.
What are we doing, man? Like, and my question is, you, the person that develops the killer robot, how do you, like, how, do you not watch the movies? Isn't the robot gonna kill him first? Isn't that how it works?
It's interesting to me that some countries are like, oh, let's go, let's go. And then you have others that are just totally against it. Those that seem totally for it, they're not necessarily like countries that are like lower on the totem pole where they're trying to gain like a advantage here. I mean, right. It's the heavy hitters. It's the big countries that we're talking about here.
Yeah, no. That was a lot of like worse news you could have possibly told me. Like it's hard to feel comfortable after something like killer robots, Gabe. It's going to be killer robots. How much they cost? Because I feel like I need to buy one. Like, do I get to train it myself? Like, that's the question. Who's going to train it? Like, where do killer robot trainers at? That's what we need.
I mean, the thing about this whole thing is that, like, yes, they're like, oh, you know, we're against artificial intelligence with, you know, robots that have their sole purpose is to kill. But it's like you have plenty of other robots that have everything but the gun in their hand, right?
Yes.
So it's just about making that step right there. But I mean, it's not like we're any farther away from, you know, the Roomba suddenly trying to run your foot over and, you know, take it off.
Yeah, I will say this, though. I am uncomfortable with the idea that Elon Musk was the voice of reason. A significant portion of our show has been ridiculing him as the exact opposite.
Yeah, with the Tony Stark, like, sunglasses in the corner, like, you guys, yeah. We've gone too far.
Yeah, God, what's happening to us?
All right, the second story of the day comes from the transportation industry.
This is Emily Badger with the New York Times. I've been talking a lot lately with people about what the future will look like when driverless cars get here. How will people use them? When will they get here? Will they make public transit obsolete? And they sound like these really theoretical questions, but the reality is that cities are already making decisions today based on what they think the future will look like. So to give you an example, voters in Nashville recently rejected a $5 billion transit referendum. And one of the arguments there was that we won't need buses and trains in the future because driverless cars will replace them. The same argument has come up in Detroit, Indianapolis, Seattle, a bunch of other cities. It's come up in New York City, where futurists have argued that we'd all be better off if we just paved over the subway and we let driverless cars use it instead. I heard versions of this argument from several tech entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, too. They really believe that driverless cars are about to disrupt everything, and so we should stop investing in old technology like subways, because all of that money is just going to be wasted. On the flip side of this are a lot of transportation planners and city officials who are deeply worried that everyone has gotten distracted by this new shiny thing. They fear that cities like Nashville are basically giving up on the present while they wait for the future, and they worry that cities are really going to regret making the wrong bets about this today. So a significant part of this argument is basically about timing. Tech optimists believe that driverless cars will be here in 2 years, skeptics think we could be waiting 20 years, and that timeline makes a huge difference, because if you don't believe this stuff is really right around the corner, then it simply doesn't make sense to redesign our cities for it now.
I didn't really understand, though, how driverless cars make the subway unnecessary. Did you get that part?
I read a story not too long ago, I believe it was in the New Yorker, about how it was like the radical future of transportation, where they talked about replacing them with driverless cars, like, down in the subway systems. So, like, you wouldn't be able to, they'd pave over, like, the subway station access, and you'd, like, be on a car that would, like, go down into the subway system and kind of, like, use it as a way to, like, free things up a bit on the roads, or, like, make the roads a little, like, you know, less cluttered.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to accomplish any of the benefits that you get from, like, a subway system. So, like, I'm thinking about New York, for example. I mean, if you get, like, if the idea is that we're going to get rid of the subway to add driverless cars, yeah, because what New York needs is more cars, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point that they're trying to make, though, is that if most of the cars are driverless, then all of the kind of, like, silly little things that slow up traffic, just like people rubbernecking and stuff like that, those things will be removed from the equation, and so traffic will flow. But isn't that just kind of a pipe dream?
Yeah, it sounds like a con. It does. But you know what else I would have said sounded like a con before now? Killer robots.
Last story of the day comes from music.
This is Karen Hahn for Vox.com. After debunking rumors that he would drop a full album this week, Chance the Rapper released a set of four new songs. In one of them, entitled I Might Need Security, he announced that he'd purchased the news website Chicagoist. Chicagoist is one of eight city-centric websites formerly run by Gothamist LLC and has been dormant since November 2017 when its parent company was suddenly shut down. In a statement, Chance called Chicagoist an integral local platform for Chicago news, events, and entertainment and said he was looking forward to relaunching it and bringing Chicago an independent media outlet focused on amplifying diverse voices and content. Be that as it may, the reaction to the acquisition has been mixed. Some have heralded Chance as saving Chicago journalism, but others have noted Chance's history of controlling how he's covered in the media. In 2016, after deeming an MTV News piece by critic David Turner to be offensive, Chance and his management threatened that they would no longer work with the company in any capacity, and the piece was subsequently pulled from the site. It isn't yet clear when Chicagoist will be back up and running or when Chance's next album is going to drop, but the pressure is certainly on.
Yo, man. As Mark Zuckerberg, running a media company isn't as easy as it looks. Because that's what Facebook did. Is Facebook basically became a media company, and then it had to make all kinds of decisions that it was not really built to make. But that's what happened. They decided that they were going to become a media company. If you think you want to run a media operation, good luck to you with that one, buddy. And also note, they're right about that with Chance. Chance is known for really getting buck with people if he does not like the way that he has been covered. That is not a good sign for somebody to run a website.
Because, I mean, he said that he's buying it so that he can run the racists out of town, but he's not exactly shutting it down.
No. I think he feels like, I think there's a certain nobility if he, you know, operating on this idea that he can get it going and he can hire a more diverse staff and he can then do better work. And like I said, that sounds like a great idea. I just have no reason to believe that he's the person that can actually pull it off. You know, like what do I know about him and who he's going to hire and all those things? I don't have any answer. This ain't like just running a blog on a large scale. Like this is a massive operation that you're talking about here.
Yeah, I can't imagine Chance the Rapper is going to be in on any editorial meetings anytime soon.
Yeah, no, it's be like the jokes people have about imagine Derek Jeter calling you in to get your third source on your latest story for the Players Tribune.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So this week, we put out for some fan fiction. I thought it would be interesting to see if we could get some real good conspiracy theories about this past summer in sports, with LeBron moving, stuff like that. And it turned out that all of them were LeBron related, but they didn't go exactly like I expected. Here's our first one from Roscoe.
They got a sports conspiracy theory for you. This is Roscoe Darwin from Carolinas. What if LeBron James went to the San Antonio Spurs and had to be assistant coach to Popovich? How would that play out? Would he get who he wanted? Would he get to sit out 60 games and just wait to the playoffs? Bah, I know I just blew your mind.
Wow, LeBron in San Antonio. Well, one thing, LeBron, hey, Pop going to be in charge, right? Like, I feel like that part I'm pretty confident on, but you're right. What would he play, 55, 60 games?
Yeah, I mean,
Pop would have him so fresh.
It would be the spot where he'd have to play the least, I would imagine. I mean, I remember it kind of being mooted, like, oh, would LeBron team up with Kawhi in San Antonio? But there wasn't really much smoke there.
No, also, man, look, Pop will win 46 games with eight dudes off the street. He don't need to play LeBron till it matters. LeBron come out there looking like the first week of the year.
Our next is from James in Chicago. It's also LeBron related, but a little different.
Hey, Romani. This is James McLaughlin, Southside Irish from Chicago, Illinois. What if LeBron James were to retire from basketball, came and played tight end for the Bears? Mitchie Trubisky throwing them touchdowns over the middle in the red zone for the next 3 years. I don't know. Maybe that's fan fiction. Maybe it's just something I came up with. Let me know what you think, dude.
Did he say Southside Irish just to make sure we knew? He wanted to make sure it wasn't the other Southside that he was talking about. Wow, LeBron going to play for the Bears. Like, can you imagine what would happen at work if that came across the ticker? LeBron quits to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, like, when we put out for conspiracy theories and fan fiction here, I really didn't know what to expect, but LeBron
dream.
That, yeah. Like, I feel like I've heard the LeBron playing, like, maybe for the Browns. Like,
but
when
the
he
Bears?
Was. But the Bears.
Say, man, sometimes you got to make it all about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like when LeVar says, I have to speak it into existence.
Yes.
Like, maybe this guy just thinks the more he talks about LeBron, you know, going to the NFL and playing for the Bears, maybe it'll actually happen. But
that's
I don't know,
I,
man.
That's all I got.
This last one is really the cherry on top. I mean, this one, this is what I was kind of expecting when we were looking out for fan fiction. This one's just a whole lot of thought went into this one, so I got to take my hat off to Mark here.
Hey, Bomani, it's Mark in Maryland. Let's go to L.A., 9:01 Pacific time, June 30th. Magic Johnson is waiting outside of LeBron's house, getting ready to get out of his car, when all of a sudden another car pulls up next to him, blocks him in, he can't get out of the door. Two men emerge from the vehicle. They walk to the door. Knock, LeBron answers. In step, Steve Ballmer and Jerry West. West starts, saying, we know you're a busy man, LeBron, and I think that you've got another meeting, but we'll get down to brass tacks right now. Know you're headed for L.A. Great career move. I made a little bit of a name for myself out here, but I think you've got a better opportunity. You know, I played for that other team in the city. So did Wilt, Kareem, Shaq, Kobe. That guy who I thought was supposed to be here, but I know you've also always fancied yourself a pioneer. So why walk down a beaten path when you can blaze a trail? Ballmer steps in and says, LeBron, luxury tax is no issue, as he hands him a laptop. On the screen sits CP3, D-Wade, and Carmelo. Ballmer says, we're putting the crew back together. West continues, LeBron, I'm here. Offer you the entertainment capital of the world. A super team. A chance to invigorate a second team with their first title. And oh, by the way, I've got something else for you. West points to the screen of the tablet, and the screen flashes with a brand new NBA logo with the silhouette of LeBron blocking Andre Iguodala in the finals. West says, I want to pass this on to you. The NBA has a new king and a new logo. Another knock at the door. A sweaty Magic Johnson bursts through to see the king shaking hands with Ballmer and West. West coolly walks out and says, Magic, I've been setting picks way longer than you have. And there you have the story of how LeBron got to L.A.
Yo, I love everything about that. The enthusiasm, the how far out that he thought that. Gabe, I wish we had T-shirts. I'd send him one.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what I was hoping to hear. I mean, the detail there, like changing the logo. This is me passing the torch to you, like both L.A. and the logo. I mean, that's like next level right there.
Yo, and I got to say, that sales pitch you put together, we need to make this man a recruiter because I would have signed up for that.
Yeah, because I mean, I heard that like obviously Magic Johnson was there like right at midnight. They were having like dinner that night. But I mean, putting us in the shoes, putting us on the ground, that's exactly what we were hoping for.
The logo was the touch.
Yes, it was.
That was the touch. Great job, Mark. Great job. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We try to get this thing done here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. All right, thank you to ZipRecruiter, our sponsor for today's show. Thank you to Peter Holly of The Washington Post. Check out his story on killer robots. Thank you to Emily Badger of The New York Times. Check out her story on driverless cars. And thank you to Karen Hahn of Vox. Check out her story on Chance the Rapper. And remember, next week we're going to do our next episode of The Right Time Book Club. The book is Friday Night Lights by Buzz Bissinger. We will be talking to Pablo about chapters 5-8. Check us out at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I can only think that you're a hater. Talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.